kitties never run and playing out of door. On top of that, they never reading books no more. You ask them who's the father of our countryman, they say was either Walt Disney or Ed Sullivan. Oh, television, television.
David Bianculli is a guest host and TV critic on NPR's Fresh Air with Terry Gross, a contributor to the show since its inception. He's been a TV critic since 1975. His latest book, The Platinum Age of Television, From I Love Lucy to The Walking Dead, How TV Became Terrific. And it's a great pleasure to welcome David Bianculli to the roundtable this morning. Sir, thank you very much. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Well, thank you. I feel guilty about the title. Now that I hear you say it out loud, it's sort of like, I'm sorry, that's all the time we have. It's a long title.
Well, if I could just shorten it and call it The Platinum Age of Television, which really says the story and tells the story, given that you're going from I Love Lucy to Walking Dead, that Platinum Age begins and ends when, in your eyes?
Well, actually, that's the reason for the big, long subtitle, is because the Platinum Age, as I finally ended up defining it, doesn't start until 1999.
Okay.
The big pivot points are The West Wing on NBC and The Sopranos on HBO. But the book and the history of genre by genre and the interviews of the people through TV history to whom I speak goes all the way to the beginning of the medium. So I do talk to David Chase from The Sopranos and Aaron Sorkin from The West Wing, but I also talk to some of the people who were there with TV at the very beginning, like, you know, Norman Lear and Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks and Bob Newhart. Those guys are fun, too.
Absolutely. I was interested in how you broke up the book. It's more by genre than it is from a chronological look.
Yeah, it was weird. Actually, the inspiration for the book, and I think this makes me sound stupid, but it's true anyway, is remember in high school those drawings of the five stages of man, you know,
where you saw
the caveman that would eventually become Homo sapiens and walk more erect? Well, my idea was to be Darwin for television and use old TV shows as the fossil records and try to figure out what were the five stages, you know, and maybe some missing links in various genres around the way. So that's what I ended up doing.
that seems like a really interesting way to go about it. So with that, once you have that structure, then it's sort of looking at those five stages of man within that structure, right?
Yes, and the problem is that I do 15 different genres, but I could have easily done 30 if I would have, you know, if they would have published three books, or I could have talked to, you know, I'm really proud of the people that I got to speak to from throughout television history to do profiles of them, but there are other people I would have loved to have talked to too. And then I realized television's a pretty big subject. You'd think I would have known this after being a TV critic for so long, but it's a big subject.
So when you take a subject like the crime genre, and you look at shows Hill Street Blues, NYPD Blue, The Sopranos, The Shield, Breaking Bad, looking at your pivot, if you will, to the Platinum Age of Television. So in that grouping, that begins with The Sopranos. How does Hill Street Blues and NYPD Blue pave the way for shows like The Sopranos, The Shield, and Breaking
Well,
Bad?
You know, you have to think, even with the start of that genre, you think of Jack Webb and Dragnet, and, you know, it's a police procedural that you get again with Law and Order, but it's just, you never follow the hero home, and he's always the hero, and he always gets his man. Well, it evolves by the time you get to Hill Street, which really changed things. You have these stories that continue from episode to episode. They don't always end well for the police. Crime sometimes pays more than being a cop does. And then by the time you get to NYPD Blue, it's even more strange. You have a guy at its center with Sipowicz, Andy Sipowicz, played by Dennis Franz, who's a very troubled kind of hero. And then you get to Breaking Bad, where it's, even if he was a hero at the very beginning, he evolves into a villain. And Sopranos starts as a villain. So there is a definite evolution there.
When you looked at these evolutions, was it sometimes hard to find the link, to find the evolution?
No, quite the contrary. The more I dug into actually watching old things, even if I'd seen them before, I was watching them with new eyes, and I was finding all sorts of things that I hadn't noticed the first time around or had never seen. In the crime genre, what you think one of the exciting things about the platinum age of television now is that even central characters can be in jeopardy and sometimes die unexpectedly. You know, we've come to accept that from The Sopranos. Certainly if you're watching Walking Dead, you know, programs like that, it's going to happen. But it happened all the way back in Naked City in the 50s, where they just killed the central character without warning and did it before the opening credits in one episode. I can't imagine how stunning that must have been back then, when you expected every episode to be like every other and just be like, you know, a deck of cards that you could shuffle any way you wanted to.
We mentioned the categories, and you said there could certainly be many more. And just the idea of sitcoms, you have family sitcoms, workplace sitcoms, splitcoms. What is a splitcom, by the way?
Oh, yeah, I apologize. I ended up, well, I don't know if Darwin made up any of his own terms, his phylum, or if they were already established. But splitcom, to me, it's a very significant type of situation comedy where a situation comedy where it's a family comedy, like Leave It to Beaver, and you're watching everybody at home. A workplace comedy like Cheers, you're watching everybody at work, and usually at the same work. But if you have a splitcom, it's home and work. So that's like The Andy Griffith Show is a perfect example, because Andy Taylor is at work with Barney, and then he's at home with Opie, and both of those are important.
And all based on the lives of individual comedians, with the possible exception of Dick Van Dyke.
See, you're good at this. You're good at this. You start looking, you start pulling at the threads, and you have a quilt before long.
So, and I should mention also single working women sitcoms, in which you talk about Mary Tyler Moore Show and the Days and Nights of Molly Dodd, Murphy Brown, Sex and the City, and of course Girls. Is when you're coming up with that lineage and the shows, were there any that you looked at individually and say, okay, this was an important show, not necessarily a good show, but an important show?
Yes. And I tried to, you know, if something was really popular, you couldn't avoid it. But I was really trying to follow the threads toward what I considered excellent television. My big battles were to only have five in a category sometimes meant I was having these awful arguments with myself. Like, does The Shield deserve one of the spaces, or does Homicide: Life on the Street? And I actually switched those out a couple of times and finally decided upon The Shield. But, man, I loved Homicide.
I mean, anytime you put a grouping together, you're just courting disaster, aren't you?
Well, you're courting argument. I don't know
right.
If it's disaster. what I'm hoping with this book, honestly, is if you go to the back cover, you have a list of all the people to whom I spoke for the book, and maybe there's a couple of people there that you go, oh, wow, I really like Larry David or David Milch or, you know, James L. Brooks or Norman Lear. Or you go inside the book, and one of those genres or one of the shows, you know, The Days and Nights of Molly Dodd, many people don't even remember. But if you loved that show, you may want to read the book just because of that entry.
The one thing that surprised me, the one thing that, as you say, you had to leave out something, right? The one thing that surprised me is no Johnny Carson, no David Letterman, no late night talk show. You do have topical comedy as a subject, but not the late night talk show.
Yeah, I folded the late night talk show into variety, and I only did that because I could only do so many genres. I mean, the book is 550 pages. The book is 205,000 words, and I had to read each one of them aloud for the audiobook version. So I know it's a long book as it is.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. There's easily a dozen more categories. But if you read the variety chapter, it does incorporate the talk show history of The Tonight Show and others. And actually, it points out that things that are going on right now in terms of streaming TV, like what Jerry Seinfeld is doing on Crackle with comedians in cars getting coffee, and what James Corden is doing more successfully on YouTube than he is on CBS with Carpool Karaoke, those, I think, are talk shows of the future. Except they're in the present. So they're talk shows of now.
David Bianculli is our guest. He is the author of the new book, The Platinum Age of Television, From I Love Lucy to The Walking Dead, How TV Became Terrific. So let us talk about that platinum age, because I've heard it referred to as a second golden age, and I like that you call it a platinum age. How did we get to this point where TV really is very good, and it's attracting the best talent in both writers and actors to come together and perform and to produce some really incredible stuff?
That's a great question. My own personal theory, since I am playing Darwin, I get to have a theory, is that when film, don't laugh at me, I worked really hard on this.
I know,
so
you did. You can laugh afterwards
and tell me that I'm really off base.
I like thinking of you as Darwin. Go ahead.
Okay. In the 70s, you know, and in the 70s you had blockbuster movies show up all of a sudden with Jaws and Star Wars. And so all the studios were increasingly desperate or greedy in terms of wanting to get the biggest audience possible. And so the wonderful movies that were done in the early 70s and the late 60s, a great age for film, those sort of went away, and they sort of migrated to television with the rise of the TV movie and the miniseries. And then it sort of evolved into weekly series taking those chances. And now we're in something in the last few years where you have miniseries, which are sort of limited anthology miniseries. And something like the first season of True Detective, both seasons of Fargo, programs that do X number of episodes, and then they get new writers, new actors, new directors. And they're wonderful. And so there has been a constant evolution of form of television, whereas movies are still trying to, for the most part, chase the blockbuster. Now you've heard my theory. What do you think?
I like your theory. I think it's a great theory. But what I'm curious about, too, is because does it also coincide with how our viewing habits have changed? Does that have anything to do with it?
Well, one key thing about it is with streaming and with the releases of DVD, both of which have happened in this century, a program like The Wire can be discovered halfway through its run or even after it's over. And you can embrace The Sopranos now, even if you weren't watching it when it was on the air. Back in the 80s with St. Elsewhere, a very complicated and demanding show, if you hadn't seen it for 2 years and I told you you have got to watch St. Elsewhere, you would watch 1 week of it and not know any of the characters, not get any of the relationships, and say, well, the hell with this, I'll go back to something easy. But now you can do that. And so programs actually build in reputation and in popularity throughout their run and afterwards. So that's a big change in terms of viewership.
I was thinking of this as I was reading your book, thinking of some of your past work on teleliteracy. And do you think that some of the success of television now and reaching this platinum age, if you will, is because we as a television audience are more teleliterate?
Yes, bless you for even knowing about teleliteracy, first of all. But yes, and not only, it's good that the audience absorbed so much good television. I mean, that's really good of us and accepted it. But the auteurs, today's makers of the platinum age of television, get the most credit because they absorbed the good television of prior decades and built upon it. I mean, that was the fun part, was interviewing people and not giving them any leading questions. I didn't say, what did you think of The Twilight Zone? What did you think of Lou Grant? I just said to each person, what did you watch when you were a kid? What influenced you when you were a teenager? What have your writings built upon? And so they could answer any way they wanted. And so I loved where that all went. And everybody watched the same shows. You know, the Dick Van Dyke Show was big. The Twilight Zone was huge. It's fun to discover stuff like that.
And that idea of that we're all watching the same thing, meaning that we were able to ferret out what was good and what was bad. And as you look at television now, does it put the networks at somewhat of a disadvantage, that it's difficult for them, and when they do have a breakout hit, it's rather rare.
Yeah, well, I think the networks, the broadcast networks, because they still want to be broadcasters, I mean, where that name came from, they're playing most of the time to the movie blockbuster sensibility. They're trying to please most of the people most of the time. And if right. Abe Lincoln were a network programmer, he would know that doesn't work. You know, it's not going to give you the big hits. I mean, The Walking Dead is more popular than any program that's on broadcast TV. And for a cable program to pull that kind of audience is amazing. And it does it because before it came out, there wasn't a show remotely like it. And that's what I think television needs to do to continue to thrive, is to keep being original.
And I guess you could go nuts thinking about this kind of stuff, but is a show like...
Oh, I have.
Is a show that is like This Is Us on NBC, which is a breakout hit, would that be as successful if it was on Hulu, if it was on Netflix? Is good good, or do we look at it differently given the venue?
I think good is good if it can be found. I mean, This Is Us builds upon, it's the same audience for programs like Parenthood and Friday Night Lights, but right. also for Transparent. And so Transparent found an audience without being on the networks, and I think that it can, but This Is Us is still saying, hey, you don't have to have life or death jeopardy every single week. You don't have to be a doctor. You don't have to be a policeman
right.
in order to have people to watch and enjoy a program.
In the choosing of the shows, we talked about that. What went into the choosing of the people that you talked to, of asking those questions that you outlined a few moments ago?
That was pretty easy. I've been a TV critic for 40 years, and there are some people that I have interviewed over the decades, and there are other people I have never had a chance to interview, but I just sort of started with a wish list of people whose work I really admired and who I wanted to know where they got their ideas from and what TV they watched. And this may sound self-aggrandizing. It's not supposed to be. But about a third of the way through the process, I had lucked into getting some very big names, so that when I was asking for the next set of interviews, I was saying, well, you know, I already got this person, that person, that person, and it made getting other people even easier.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. And you look at somebody like Gary Shandling, who we lost this year. So I assume that means even more to you that you got to talk to someone like that about their thoughts on television before they passed.
Yeah, and you know, I didn't know he was ill, if he was ill, when I spoke to him. But Gary Shandling's a great person to point out. So many people said that the Larry Sanders Show was so significant to them that when I wrote the chapter on Gary Shandling, and I quoted all of those people before he died. And so I went back into the book and prefaced that profile by saying that all of the comments, not only by me, but by everyone I quote about how important, you know, Gary Shandling was to comedy, were delivered before his death. I didn't want people to read it and think they're just being nice because we've just lost him. Mm. We appreciated him while he was still here.
You think of the people that you include, too, that would be in the senior class of Mel Brooks and Carol Burnett and Norman Lear, people that have been, Bob Newhart, people have been around for a long, long time and really are still contributing to the medium.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, Mel Brooks is still doing really good things on television. And you talk to Carl Reiner, and it's like, oh, Carl Reiner, your show of shows, one of the very best variety shows ever. And
Absolutely.
Then, oh, Carl Reiner, creator of the Dick Van Dyke Show, one of the best situation comedies ever. And there's a perfect early splitcom. You know, at work, he had his variety show and all the workings of that. And at home, he had Laura Petrie. He was so much fun to talk to.
Well, the book is a delight. It is really a lot of fun, and I read it twice. I enjoyed it so much. I really enjoyed it. I went back and sort of looked at other things.
I wish you would have read it out loud. I wouldn't have had to spend all those days in the studio.
It's the platinum age of television, from I Love Lucy to The Walking Dead, how TV became terrific. And it is a terrific book about terrific television. It's published by Doubleday. David Biancooley, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. Congratulations on the book, and best of luck with it.
It is a great pleasure to be here, and thank you. Your enthusiasm is so obvious. You really asked great questions. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Again, David Biancooley is the author of The Platinum Age of Television. It's published by Doubleday. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.